Accession number 31411, Reel 3.
And joined the sister in the 8th Minesweeping Battalion. Then the flotilla leader was in the Coquette, and she was taken away for some job up in the Adriatic. And I became, as an R&R sub-lieutenant, the navigator for the whole flotilla of fleet minesweepers. It's a joke, really, isn't it, when you think? And we did those jobs. That was good. But the captain was a smashing fellow. And he'd been in the Battle of Jutland and was at Osborne, so that's going about Kirkpatrick. His brother was the first British ambassador to the United Nations or something like that, but he was a smashing fellow. And he'd been in Dunkirk in command of a minesweeper, and as I say, in the Battle of Jutland, so it's all history. And of course, the Thisbe was another old steamship, two twin screw. Reciprocating the steam engine, as was the Traumatic Bay, not coal burning. But what happened to him? He was the Geddes Act. Yeah. He was chopped out of that, and he had a bit of a rough time between the wars, and he hadn't been aboard a ship since 1923 and 1939, and he was suddenly appointed in command of a minesweeper. But he was a very good bloke, and I got on very well with him. Anyway, after we cleaned all the mines up there, AFO, as they then called them, Admiralty Fleet Orders, I think they call them something different now, came out and said all R&R officers like me who'd mistaken their certificates during war service can apply for a special course. So I went to the captain, and he said, "Oh, you know," in fact, he showed it to me, and he said, "Yeah, you better do this." And I said, "Well, I did think I might stay in the Navy." And he said, "Well, take my advice." He said, "I'll recommend you for it, but the same will happen to you as will happen to me. There'll be a chop down, and you'll be the first sort of lot that'll go out." And so I didn't. So I came back, and the Navy ran a course, and we lived in the V&A, the Victoria and Albert, the old Royal Yacht.
Mm-hmm.
And then we topped it up by going to Cass's, which is the normal place, you know, in the city here. And I went up and took a second mate's ticket, and I passed second mate. And when I went back to the Admiralty, I said, "Well, I've got second mate's ticket." "Well, that's it. That's you done." So they released me. Like, I kept on the R&R. And after not knowing what to do, I eventually joined the Union Steamship Company of New Zealand, which was a part of the P&O based in New Zealand. I went out there for 6 years on ships out there, but I got a bit homesick and fed up and had domestic problems and one thing or other. So I came back and joined Elders and Fifes. And then I got married, and I was getting married, and one of the passengers in Elders and Fifes said, "Well, you don't want to spend the rest of your life at sea, but actually, in retrospect, I should have done." And he offered me a job in Bristol. Well, he didn't. He offered me a job. He offered me an interview with his personnel director, who then pushed me on to, and he said, "This is a place for you." And he gave me Ford Motor Company and Lucas Industries, you know. Cut a long story short, I wrote to them both. I was living in Bromley. I was on board the ship when I got the answer. The Lucas one said, "If you're interested in this part of the world, contact Mr. So-and-so." And I thought, this part of the world, Lucas, Birmingham, I don't know, Birmingham. The other letter was Ford, and said Dagenham. I said, "Well, that's near enough home." I was the only officer on board. In the evening, I went back and looked at the letter from Lucas, and this part of the world was their branch in Bristol.
Yeah.
So I phoned the chap up. Cut a long story short, he talked me into kind of working for him. I did one more voyage with Elders and Fifes and worked for Lucas. Just right started again, but I ended up as their area manager, and then back here in London as the UK sales manager for CAV, the heavy end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. But I stayed in the R&R. But I always thought, Christ, I wish I stayed at sea.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Guessing you
so that was roughly it. don't think there's anything much more. But there's some pictures here.
Can I just go back and ask you about meeting the e-boats, or about encountering e-boats on the East Coast? Is that all right?
Yes. Well, we had one notable engagement, which is in this in the journal, actually.
Okay.
I mean, what used to happen? You used to listen to HE, hydrophone effect, with the hydrophones. You could hear, you could pick up, you could, with our ASDIC, actually, it also had combined with a hydrophone, and you could pick up a reciprocating ship's engine by, you've got a triple expansion, you could pick up diesel, you could pick up turbine, you could pick up different sorts, you could have whales and dolphins and all sorts of things if a trained good operator. And of course we had it on the bridge, all on the loudspeaker all the time, so you could hear going bing, or else whatever, so you've got it sort of in your head all the time. So you pick up these things on that. And I think that we were, it was off sort of lowest off way, but it's all detailed in there. We used to get a lot of sort of warnings of e-boats, but not that was before I left, joined the ship, was the major e-boat battles. We used to get a lot of false alarms, and well, not necessarily false alarms, but alarms that never sort of transpired. But in this particular occasion, they picked up the hydrophone effect, and it got stronger and more sort of confirmed, and so we fired the star shell from the forward mounting. But we also had on the mounting, you know, when you look at the twin four inch here, on the side of the, I mean, there wasn't a turret, it was screen, and on the side of the screen there was rocket launchers, and they used to fire off for illumination. So you fired and you could see they could pick up the e-boats. And I was on the bridge, and I was walking involved in before I was the navigator, I was a midshipman. I was on the bridge, and the navigator, the bloke I took over, was in the wheelhouse down below, in the chart room, which was back on the, and I was keeping him in the picture about this, that and the other thing, and generally sort of helping the captain, the navigator, myself and him. We sunk about three that night.
Really? Goodness.
And there was a big write-up in the News of the World, not the News, the Mirror, I think. Champion e-boat chaser of the East Coast, and then this thing appeared.
Did you see what was going on? But was it clear, or was it all happening very fast? Or?
Oh, very fast. No, you didn't. Guns. I mean, I know. Remember seeing, looking over the, my head in the chart table and working things out, and looking up and seeing bloody tracer coming and dodging down and sort of chaser, then firing at us, and the guns going off, and the gunnery control bloke up here could see, well, obviously he could see, and he could say, well, that's one blown up and things like that. Well, up in here.
Okay, so it was all at night.
Yeah.
And do you know what sort of ranges they were? Was it quite close range fighting?
I should say half a mile, something like that. And there was quite a few I think we were the only one actually in action of it. The other, because it was more like a dogfight an aeroplane, really.
I read somewhere that they used to lie up by the boys.
I did, yeah, that's quite right. You see, you could get them. I was going to mention that. That's what did happen. And the only way you could sort of discover that was if you got a. You really discover it was only an impression. If you got a bigger echo than you would normally expect from a boy.
What was your opinion of the e-boats as a kind of as an enemy?
Well, were they, much of a thing. We used to call them Ernest, and when you'd look at the weather, and if you've got a dark night, mostly in the winter, and probably a dark, calm night, they say, "Oh, Ernest will be out tonight." What was your opinion on them? Well, they were.
Were they? It's probably not a very good question, really. But sort of, were they seen as a threat that you worried about fairly constantly?
Well, I mean, it was a threat that we were principally concerned with dealing with. I mean, we were an anti. Well, that was a. It was our primary role was to protect the convoys from e-boats. So they were a very real threat when they were about, but when they the same with our coastal forces, MTBs, MGBs, MLs, they were very weather dependent. I mean, I don't think they were much good after about force 4 or 5. I mean, coastal forces, I mean, probably not true, really. Well, not true, but we used to call them costly farces because, I mean, half the bloody time, you know, you couldn't have an escort if they didn't turn up because the weather was not a great big Atlantic gale. We used to get terrible weather in the North Sea. I mean, I don't mean that sort of weather. I mean, terrible weather. I remember we were in dry dock in after some hell of a gale, and the whole of the framework, you could just like a corrugated.
So the winters were pretty bad then.
Horrible. Yeah, cold and dark, and that was the really was the weather and the dark and the mining and the keeping station and fatigue. And
did you ever see a ship lost to mines? Or
they used to blow up so frequently. But I mean, they did. Quite a lot of ships used to get blown up, but they got better at it, and the minesweepers got better at it. But I can show you some pictures if you like.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. Well, I think that's more or less a summary of what it was. Okay. But they were finally, the officers. There was, when there was Johnny Dyer, the latter, in the two halves. When I was a sub-lieutenant, Bowerman went, there was quite a lot of changes, but I stayed. There was Dyer was the CO, an RN, commissioned gunner was the, he'd been in the Euryalus, a cruise out in the Mediterranean, was the first lieutenant. There was a gunner. The engineer was an R&R two-striper from British Tankers. All the rest were RMVR. There was an RMVR. We almost carried a doctor, two-striper RMVR doctor, we always did. And I used to occasionally have to, when I was a midshipman, take him over to a ship in the convoy for some reason or other. But he had a bit of a, I mean, his major job was the deciphering. An officer had to do the ciphering. And the wardroom wine caterer. And the entertainments officer, that was his chief job. So it wasn't much medical. But they changed quite a lot. I thought, we can't keep these blokes doing this sort of work. And we used to take RAF people out to give them an idea of a convoy.
Ah, this would be aircrew, would it? Just pilots.
Pilots.
You ever get any poles?
Probably. I can't. Yeah, we used to take these flights. And they used to take us for flights. I remember I went to Turnhouse once. As an in Harvard, they said, we'll take you out. So they took me in on a flight in Avro.
Is it an Anson?
Anson. And we were flying all over the bloody place. And I thought, well, what's that down there? Oh, that's Norway. And I thought, Christ, I couldn't believe you'd take that way. I thought it was a flight up and down the further forward.
Was that supposed to be so that you could kind of understand each other's problems? Just, or was it just
I think the RAF put us, yes, but that was the only official bit. The other was sort of...
Did you feel that you got enough air cover, or...
Yeah, I think so. Probably, yeah.
Did you ever, were you ever attacked by German aircraft?
Early on, yeah, we were, yeah. Frequently, off Flamborough Head. And we had a little, we had on the bridge, I mean, the armour, we had the main, we had, what do we have, the two, in, the four four-inch, or the two twin four-inch guns. And some early, two Oerlikons, I think, somewhere along where the torpedo tubes used to be. They'd taken the torpedo tubes out. There was Oerlikons there. And on the either side of the bridge, there was a Bren gun that they picked up at Dunkirk, and a Strip Lewis. Now, the Dunkirk story, I mean, I wasn't in the ship, I was in the Worcester during Dunkirk. But the Westminster, they said, the chaps who'd been in it, they said, oh, Dunkirk, we were in Dunkirk, oh, Dunkirk, this and that. And I thought, and they said, that's where we got this Bren gun, we picked that up at Dunkirk. And that was it. They said, and we were knocked about in Dunkirk. That's what I led to believe. Now, there's a book about Dunkirk. Well, lots of books, but one I've got, list of all the ships involved, and she's not mentioned in that. But these blokes swore mine it was. And some years ago, I ran into one of the leading seamen who lived in Bristol, because quite a lot of the crew from the Westminster lived in Bristol. And I was telling him about, asking him, and he said, well, I was involved in the Dunkirk thing. And I said, well, what happened? He said, well, we never got there. And I said, well, what was that? And he said, I can't believe this. But this is what he said. He said, going over to Dunkirk, there was a Belgian ship got on a, ran aground or something. And there was loads of gin on board it. And we got involved in this, and we got so pissed they couldn't get there. Well, that's the story. So I can't really tell you very much about a gun. There you are.
Thank you.
One lot said, oh yes, we were all, you know, gathered work at Dunkirk. The other bloke said, no, they were all bloody drunk. So I don't know. But here's some pictures. Mm. Now, they're pretty higgledy-piggledy. I mean, I just scramble up together. Oh, what's this? Oh, that's a write-up I did for... For the, yeah, here you are, there's a bit of a write-up, you can hang on to that.
Oh,
for,
thank you.
For, the, to the, fly, what's the name, B&W Association. Now, this is all...
Oh, that's great, thank you.
Westminster. That was me there as a sub-lieutenant. That's the bloke who introduced me to my wife. That's the... RN two striper, who's the first lieutenant, but they're all Westminster pictures.
Oh, these are fabulous.
And that's, those are pictures waiting just in Sheerness, waiting just before Dunkirk. Not Dunkirk.
The D-Day.
D-Day. And that's a good picture from the, that was me on leave in Bromley, but that just happens to be on there. That's taken. That was, I was also
that's
once
an excellent
there.
Picture.
That bloke that was the first lieutenant was eventually killed. And that's a view from the from up
that's
here.
That's such a good picture.
Down to there.
That's right down on the so the open bridge in a North Sea gale.
Oh
must
yeah,
have been
it was
quite
all
fun.
Open bridges. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. And those are all the midshipmen on the class in Greenwich. There's just some random pictures of the Westminster. And there's a good overall picture of it.
Yeah, that's a good
and
one.
There's before she was converted. Oh, that's me and the bloke who introduced me to my wife.
This is a North Sea convoy, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's the doctor looking for something to do. There's the gunner. And there's one of the blokes and his wife. It was his wife, too. And there's some other pictures, convoy pictures.
Traumatic Bay was your Bay class
frigate. Yeah. And there's that. But I do want those back. But you
no, absolutely.
Keep them for a month,
yeah.
But,
I will. What I'll do is I can scan them here. Yeah. So.
And there's some other.
Tremendous.
Eh?
Thank you very much.
And that's just somebody wrote to me about his father who'd been in the Westminster as a rating, and he sent me some pictures. And these are some of the escorts, the trawler escorts.
So were they Royal Naval Patrol Service?
No, they weren't. No, the Naval Control Service or something different. They're all, that's Westminster. Just odd pieces, they don't really tell you what. That was a Polish destroyer that was attached to the Scythe Escort Force.
Sleipner.
And that's just some odd pictures. Well, they're bloody awful, aren't they? They're not much cop. And that's Johnny Dyer, who became the captain. That's a picture of him. See, this fellow was Walmsley, was a Worcester cadet.
Right.
And he got 3 DSCs and Christ knows what. But there's a write-up about him, and he was a captain and Johnny Dyer was a... But there's a bit of a write-up about them there. Yeah, hang on.
Thank you.
And here's my...
It's a journal.
Journal, such as it covers the Nelson as well.
Fabulous.
But it doesn't go all through my time in the Westminster, because eventually I would... As I say, you were... See, I was only 17 when I joined the ship, and most RN midshipmen... most RN midshipmen only did a certain time, and they were promoted. But I had to wait till I was 17 and a half, and I'd done 2.5 years as a midshipman, so I didn't do the journal. Eventually, as you'll see, this Erasimov, so it dies out before I was made sub-lieutenant. But it covers that
really
action.
Really detailed, though. Does it cover the action with the e-boats?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
It's not really schoolboyish writing, isn't it? And a lot of remarks from the first ten are balls if I got it wrong.
Did you have to write this up every day then, and it was checked?
Yeah.
Was it?
Mm. I've also got my father's First World War one.
Well, what was he?
He was in the Royal Garrison Artillery.
Oh my goodness.
In the Passchendaele and Ypres and all those things. But he's a better writer, and he was.
So is this the first lieutenant marking it?
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
Well, I did.
You've obviously put "we went to Leith," and he's told you needed to put why you went to Leith.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of caustic remarks like
it's
that.
It's like being back at school, isn't it?
Oh, it was. Well, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, in the Nelson, the midshipman, if you misbehave, you got beaten.
Really?
Well, I never knew it happened, but I mean, it did.
Was that
by the sub of the gunroom?
Was that normal practice, or was that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it didn't happen when I was there, and I mean, I would have thought that was a bit much during wartime and things like that, but it happened. You could, yeah.
Do you think Nelson was an unhappy ship?
As far as I was concerned, it wasn't a very happy ship. As far as I was concerned. But I mean, I hadn't done a day's. I mean, I'd been aboard a warship. I mean, I used to go to Chatham Navy Week. Then I went to the Worcester, which was very. I mean, the captain superintendent of the Worcester was a VC from the First World War, an old Worcester cadet. And it was very. It was very naval. I mean, the instructors were Navy, the lecturers were Master Mariners, and we used to do a lot of naval drill, and very smart. We used to do these warships weeks, and very much so. But it was the actual technical training, well, the seamanship, which in a way replies to both, Navigation and cargo work and ship's ability and meteorology and signals. And we always did a lot of signals. I mean, every night we used to have to do in pairs. You know, you'd be sitting here and I'd be sitting, and the instructor, who was an ex-naval yeoman, he used to Morse on light a paragraph from the telegraph, and I'd sing it out and you'd write it down, and then he'd do it on semaphore, and then we'd swish around and I'd write it and you'd read it. So every night we used to do a paragraph of semaphore and a paragraph of light. So, because I mean, in a merchant ship they don't carry signalmen, the officer and the apprentices used to do it, or the cadets. And so I found that in the Navy, especially in the R&R. When I was in little ships in the R&R, not about the only one who could read the bloody light.
There must have been a problem on the convoys if they didn't have trained signalers. Or did they have naval signalers on the merchant ships by then?
On the Commodore. But the rest of it was done on... The most of it was done on... and flags. Now, I can't actually remember signalling a merchant ship at all, other than by flags and going alongside with a loud hail. I mean, we used to up and round and round and bawling at them on loud hailers and things like that. There was and of course, radio was very restricted. But when I was out in the New Zealand ships, I mean, they had the New Zealand ships. I was in loads of their ships, loads of them. Everything from one passenger used to run from Sydney to Vancouver, and a big 17,000 ton, one of the very first big diesel ships, quadruple four Oxford diesels, a ship called the Arangi. That's it, the Arangi. And was on the island ones, Wellington, Lyttelton, Trans-Tasman ships, the local coasters, the colliers. They used to run coal all over the place. Loads of ships. And I was some second mate of an old collier there, some real old ship, bloody old things. That was a bit of a... Now, that was a bit of a culture shock, coming out of the Navy, straight out there. And the fleet was worn out. It was a P&O company, but it was a sort of... They had some great ships, where the ship was... They had a lot of war losses, and the fleet was worn out. They had some old things they'd had as prizes after the First World War. Coal burners. Couldn't get crews, so if they got deserters from the bloody UK ships of... Christ, it was murder, absolute murder. Terrible, when I think about it, some of them. They're awful. But I remember I was on this bloody old collier and we passed one of the New Zealand Navy. They had a New Zealand Navy then, they had two cruisers, the Black Prince and the Bellona, but they could never man more than one at a time. We passed one of them. And this chum of mine, I've been in the Worcester Wars, I was in the Recycling School, he was mate of the upper deck on the Black Bellona, Black Prince one of them. And anyway, we passed them, and I flashed this bloody thing up, said, "What ship?" And they were absolutely amazed, because they never expected they'd get a bloody signal
from a collier.
A bloody old, broken down old collier. However, I would have thought about that. So that's about it, really.
Thank you.
Up.